Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. This is a response of the day for the 26th of Shvat. Today we'll be discussing the Shagat Aryeh, Shagas Aryeh's view of when you have to rebury people and how you have to handle it or not handle it. And it's a case that was sent to him by a student of his, Rav David Sinsheim. So he gives most of the halakhic material, and then the Shagas Aryeh responds with a few ha'arot, a few comments of his own. Since we don't often get to learn from him, this may be our first time, because for all that his book is called the Book of Responsa, it's not quite responses. It also picks up a lot of issues that he just thought of on his own and wants to discuss. Shagas Aryeh was an important Talmud Chacham of the 18th century, of the 1700s. He lived just about the whole 1800s. 1700, sorry. He was born in 1695 and he passed away in 1785. So he really spanned that century, as it were. But he had a hard life. He was both inserted in and removed from many rabbinic positions. It's unclear to me why all this happens, but he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So this is Shut Shagas Aryeh, Simon Yud Zayin, from Dinei Chadash, Simon Yud Zayin. This is what it says in the Bar Ilan on it. But Shut Shagas Aryeh, Simon Yud Zayin, it's dated, the original question is dated the 26th of Shvat, a Wednesday, of Tav Kuf Mem Dalet Lamed. So that would be 1784. Sorry, it's Tav Kuf Mem Dalet. The Lamed is Lifrat. It's according to which count, but it's 1784, this tshuva. So he's already an elderly man. This is soon before he passes away. And his student, Yosef David Sinsheim, who I know nothing about, I'm sure I could find things about him, but I'm not going to right now, writes with the following question. The Jewish community of Paris, and they are, we'll find out in the tshuva, a large Jewish community, but not a very well-organized Jewish community. The Jewish community of Paris, the Ashkenazi Jewish community of Paris, had a problem to which they turned to this Rav David, Yosef David Sinsheim. They had the following problem. For many years, over 50 years, the Ashkenazi Jews of Paris would bury their deceased, meaning their cemetery was in, it's called the Gan, but it's not like a garden, it's the property of a certain non-Jew. And they would pay him a certain well-agreed amount for every body that they buried there. Yeah, it's been about 4 years. The non-Jew told them he doesn't want this arrangement anymore. He wants to actually plant his garden. He wants them to, or his field, meaning, I guess, you know, let's say whatever it was, new crop came about. It would be as if he discovered oil in the field, and he decided he wanted to use his field. And he wants to remove the deceased from their graves. So they took him to court, and the court agreed that they could have 5 more years. For 5 more years, they could use it, and he can't touch the cemetery, he can't touch the graves, but after 5 years, it's his property, he can get his property back. So during this 5 years, it seems like the Jewish community of Paris, the Ashkenazi Jewish community of Paris, didn't get very much done. They tried to buy the plot from him, and he didn't want to, and then they wanted to buy another place for a cemetery, and that did work out. And now they're getting to the time, and he's going to be his right to just like throw out the graves and just plow through them, and that wouldn't be good. So, with a lot of effort, right? That's the words used. The Hishtadlut Gadol, the Sephardic Jews, agreed that they could use their cemetery. They have room in their cemetery, and it's right next to the current cemetery, to this, you know, garden, this field, this whatever it was that belonged to this non-Jew. So the Sephardim are willing to let them use it for a while and bury there. But they don't have room. They don't have so much room there as well. And so there's got a couple of issues. See the issues. One is, can you move them? If you look at Shulchan Aruch, the only reasons to allow moving people are you're going to put them with their relatives or you're going to bring them to Israel for burial, to Israel for burial. So this doesn't seem to be one of those conditions. That's that question number one. Question number two was, if the place in the new cemetery is too small to hold all the bodies, can you bury them in coffins, so in our own note, put one on top of the other. Is that allowed or not allowed? Question number three is, now when they're going to the graves, obviously that all that's left by this time of decomposition is bone. Do they have to keep the bones of the various bodies separate, or is halakhically, once it's just bones, they can put it all together? That's question number three. Question number four is the aronot, the coffins that they've been using until now, which they're not going to rebury them in. I think it's because the coffins that they've been using until now are sort of worn out, and they can't rebury them in them anyway. So what do they have to do with them? Can they burn them, or do they have to bury those coffins again? And then finally, the last question is, when they buy the new cemetery, what's the procedure for what should they do about buying it? So that we, I think, have seen together that in the late 1800s, early 1900s, Rav Cook, and I think we saw Rav David Tzvi Hoffman talk about the customs about how you dedicate a new cemetery. But that's not going to come up here. That's their question, but they're not going to give the same answer at all about how you do it. They had, the question we'll find out is, they had this tradition that you don't buy a new cemetery until you have, or you don't dedicate a new cemetery until you already have two people who have passed away who need cemeteries. But until then, you don't do it. So this is a question they asked him. And now they asked this Rav David, Yosef David Zinsheim. He now records what he answered to them, and he wants to check with the Shagas Aryeh that he got it right. So he says, in terms of your answers, the first question, since it's clear that the non-Jew is going to plow through them and take away whatever materials he finds and just get rid of them, however he gets rid of them, obviously it's better and more of a kavod, more of an honor to the deceased for us to take care of them and to remove them from their graves and put them in some nicer place in their graves. He points out the tour, Paskins and Simon Shin Samach Gimel, that in order to honor the deceased, then you're allowed to move the deceased. So if that's true, now it's true that the Torah only mentioned taking the body to Eretz Yisrael or burying the person with his forefathers in like a family plot, but says Yosef David Zinsheim, obviously that this is at least as much that honor that you don't have a non-Jew plowing through whatever bones are left and then whatever bones he finds, just tossing them somewhere. And this basically has been written that in the name of the Hagos Hasri, that anytime you have a worry that people, that non-Jews are going to disturb Jewish graves, then it's a mitzvah to move them, and so to the Mahariel. So therefore, that's the first answer, that you clearly can move them. There's a whole slew of authorities that you can move. So he's got a slew of people he quotes, the Maharshal, and Chacham Tzvi, and Rambam Yipanu, and other Rabbanim who all said that you can, that you're allowed to do this. You're allowed to move the bodies. Now, in terms of the second question, so there too, in Siman Shin Samach Gimel Shulchan Aruch, it's always interesting to me watch when Mishivim say, you know, it's clear and expressly said in Shulchan Aruch. I'm not sure what they mean by that. I think they mean, I can tell you this, but it always strikes me there's a hint there of you should have known better, right? You should have looked it up, Ishin. But in any case, in Shin Samach Gimel, they quote Rav Haigon. So Rav Haigon is an ancient source, I mean, relatively ancient source, around the year 1000, and so very authoritative. He says, L'chachil, you can do that as long as, Rav Haigon said, as long as you leave six tefachim between the two bodies. Six tefachim is about, depending on how you figure a tefach, is about 2 feet, right? So three tefachim is about a foot, maybe a little less than a foot, depending on maybe somewhere between 9 inches and a foot, depends on how you figure it. But so somewhere about 9 inches to a foot and a half between the bodies is, I'm sorry, for six tefachim is what he says. Six tefachim is somewhere between a foot and a half and 2 feet would be six tefachim, which is about an amah. As long as you left that, you'd be okay. But less than that, no. And then he says, and I saw the Tashbits who said that, they had a quote from Avel Rabati, that if you have aronot, if they're on top of each other, sorry, if the coffins are on top of each other, or they're next to each other, then you can even get by with three tefachim, which would be about 9 to 12 inches, and because you don't have to worry, because when they're on the same level as each other, I think there's more of a likelihood that there would be problems. We'll see as we go on. Now, the Baha'i had said that they should shatat chak, right? That's when you're allowed to do it. It's not like you're like generally allowed to do it. You're allowed to do that in a shatat chak, in a time of stress, in a time of trouble. But that's certainly the case here because, if we don't do this with them, these bodies are just going to be, who knows what's going to happen to them. So this is clearly a time of stress or trouble. Therefore, you can rely on that and therefore bury them one on top of each other, even with just maybe three tefachim, but certainly with six tefachim gap between them, you should be allowed to. And in that same Siman and Shulchan Aruch, the Rabbi Haigon also says, though, that we have to make sure that the bones don't get mixed up with each other, right? The need for this space is to make sure. So even if it's not coffins, even if it's just bones, you'd also have to leave this space between them because you have to make sure that the bones don't get mixed up. Except that, says Rav Yosef David Zinsheim, it seems like that's not so clear because the Rivan says that if you're collecting bones, meaning you're moving a person or the remains of people, you have to take, and there's several remains, you can put the remains of one person at the head of a basket or at the front of a basket and the other one on the other side of a basket. So it sounds like that even though you're not allowed to mix them, but you don't have to make sure that they're completely separate from each other. So So that Joseph Dotzenstein suggests and thinks that maybe if they were actually in coffins, even if Heigl wouldn't think you'd need a full separation between, you wouldn't need any separation of space because the coffin would do it. But if you're only doing it with like planks between them, not a full coffin, but planks separating them, there you have to worry that the planks will get worn out and worn through or eaten through by whatever happens in the ground, and therefore you need to make sure that you also have a space between them. That's his suggestion for how you do it. But fundamentally, we think that generally you need a space, even with these full coffins, and certainly with partial, with planks, because those can rot and then you'll have a problem with them. And therefore that means that also it would seem very clear that you have to put the bones of each person who passed away in a separate, if you're going to put it in a bag of some sort, for whatever reason, you'd have to put in a separate one for each one, and then you'd have to also make a distinction between, a separation between them of 6 tvachim, or one on top of the other, you might be able to get away with 3 tvachim of 9 inches to a foot. But if it's completely impossible, as Rav Haigon himself said, that obviously it's better to bury them at all rather than not. But this is the way we want to do it if we have the possibility of burying them. In terms of the coffins in which they originally be buried, says Rav Yosef David Zinsheim, there, he thinks it's clear that you're allowed to burn them. And then for the last question, this is all him, and then the Shlomo Gosari is going to respond or make a couple of points about it. In terms of the fifth question about how you build a cemetery, you make a cemetery. So he says people always say that you don't buy it completely, you don't finalize the sale until you have, sadly, in Chas V'Shalom, two people who have passed away who need to be buried there. And Rav Yosef David Zinsheim says, I don't know where they got that from. I haven't seen a sefer that says this. Even so, if the Jewish people have a custom, that's a custom we have to take very seriously, because the Jewish people don't just develop customs. This is a whole interesting topic of its own, that whole question of Jewish communities and how much we trust them and don't trust them, and when we do and don't. One of my teachers, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, spent a lot of his academic career talking about customs and finding the ways that Jews developed customs, and when, more than that, when rabbinic authorities respected the customs of the Jewish people such that they said, oh, if it's a custom, it must have a reason, and when they didn't. So that's a question of its own. Rabbi Soloveitchik, his father, had spent much time, used to also try very hard, whenever he saw a custom, to explain the halakhic sources of that custom. I think it's an interesting claim, an interesting question, right? Because I think there might be times when Jews just come up with things, and they might be based on superstition, they might be this, they might be that. But Rav Yosef David Zinsheim is saying, if you have a Jewish custom, it's Torah, and therefore, and maybe it's sort of like, as the Gemara says, lo yiftach adam piv l'satan, we shouldn't like open up the realm of, it's not quite superstition, but it's, you shouldn't open up the possibility to expect bad things to happen. So here too, you wouldn't buy a cemetery because you don't want to say, oh, people are going to pass away. So maybe. That's what he says, but that's only a maybe. So that's the way he ends it. And that's what he says, I wrote, and now I'm sending it to you, and I wrote it as like a halachic discussion, right? I was thinking about these issues, but I don't want to rule on these issues until I hear from you, my teacher. So he sends this to the Shagasari. Shagasari writes, I've got your letter, and everything you wrote is kedin kahalacha, you got it all right, and it's clear in the poskim. But since there's no Beis HaMedrash below Chiddush, since whenever people study together, we think there's always new ideas that come out, I'm going to come and share some halakhic thoughts with you. So he says, the Rav Haigon that you quoted, that everybody is clear, that you shouldn't mix two bodies, right? That's what we said was clear from Rav Haigon, and he says it is clear from Rav Haigon, but there's a problem, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Mem Zayin says, how do you know that you're not allowed to bury an evil person near a righteous person, a Rasha Eitel Tzadik, and they give a proof. Now, I'll get to the proof in a second, but the Gemara's context is, for example, we'll get to it, the Gemara's context is, even if you have people who are put to death for their crimes, the Gemara says you don't bury the people who are put to death with a more serious death near the people who are put to death with a less serious death. Because the people who were put to death with a less serious death penalty compared to the other people are like tzaddikim. So that's how far the Gemara takes it. Meaning even within those who are so evil that they get put to death by a court for their crime, even within that, there are gradations. So the Gemara says, how do you know this whole idea that you don't put people to death, you don't bury people near you don't bury people together. I'm sorry, you don't bury evil people near righteous people. So there's a pasuk in Malachim that talks about after Elisha passes away, people were burying some other person. There was a person who they were burying, and they saw a gedur, they saw an army coming towards them, and they got scared. So they threw this newly deceased person they were about to bury into the grave of Elisha, and the deceased man's body touched the bones of Elisha and came to life, and he walked away. So the idea being that Elisha was so offended by being buried, however this works, but Elisha was so offended by being buried next to this man, or with this man touching him, that he resurrected the man came to life and walked away. But that shows that we shouldn't be burying evildoers near righteous people. So the Rav Tzadok HaZarya says, I don't understand the whole story. If you're going to tell me that halachically you're supposed to leave 3 tefachim between bodies, even if you're putting them on top, and if you're putting them next to each other, you have to leave 6 tefachim because each body gets 3 tefachim around it, then how do you know from this story that we can't bury evildoers near righteous people? Because in this case, what happened? They threw the body into Elisha's grave and it touched Elisha's bones. So I can say, oh, since he got thrown into Elisha's bones, that's why Elisha brought him to life and couldn't stand being near him. But maybe if, in fact, he had been buried 6 tefachim away from Elisha, maybe the fact that he was an evildoer wouldn't have mattered to us. He was buried 6 tefachim away. Maybe that would have been good enough. Meaning, from the story, how do you know? That's the Shekhazari's question. If the general practice is to bury with distance between them, then why does this story tell you that you're not allowed to bury the evil near the righteous? And now, more than that, also, it sounds like it's only evil and righteous that are a problem, but it sounds like if the person who had been buried had been as righteous as Elisha, or had been just relatively had been righteous enough that you didn't have to not bury him there, this would have been fine. But we don't think this is fine, throwing a person onto the bones of a deceased person. So why is that story teaching us anything? Shouldn't it have to be that they have to be buried separately? So how does the story tell us anything? So he suggests that the whole idea that we have to leave space between the bodies is only for their final burial places. So why do we refer to final burial places? Because he says it's clear in the sources that the original custom was that you would bury somebody in a temporary burial spot. You'd bury them in the temporary burial spot until the body decomposed. And then once the body decomposed, you took the bones and then buried them in their permanent burial in the family crypt or grave or whatever it was. That was their system. How does he know that was their system? First of all, the Warren Kamori Kata, which talks about Avelis issues, Warren issues speaks about the day of Likut Atzamot, the day of gathering the bones, and with the halachos of that, there's sort of a mini repeat of mourning on that day. So what's that custom? That's the idea. You would have one place you'd bury them until the body's decomposed. Then you would rebury them once it was just bones. And then that makes sense also in the story with Elisha, that the man they were burying was they were burying him there only until the body decomposed. How do we know? Because it says the man's body touched the bones of Elisha, but not the bones of the man's body. It sounds like the man was still a full body, and then they were going to bury him. And not only that, he says, and that would be the only way that the man could come back to life and immediately run away, because he still had his full body there. But if it was just bones, it would be a whole different kind of a thing. So therefore, he thinks that that's what was going on, that this was a man they were burying temporarily, and that's why there wasn't this separation. The whole idea of separation is only when they're being put in their final burial place. So he says also that would make sense for the question of those who were put to death by a court, when they would say that they says there in the Gemara that they had 2 cemeteries there, one for the Neragin v'Nechanakin, the people who were put to death by the sword or by being choked to death, that's the lower levels of capital crime, and a different one for the Niskalim v'Nisrafim, and a different one for those who were stoned to death or had hot lead thrown down, which is srifa, which is halachic burning. Then the Gemara there says, after the bodies decompose, they would gather the bones and they would bury them in the place of with their forefathers. Meaning, even people put to death are not left permanently out of their family burial plots. They eventually get to go be buried with their families, but they wait till after they have decomposed. And the Gemara there says, and why do they wait? Because you can't bury Rasha Etel Tzadik. You can't bury evildoers near the righteous. And then, but all of these people are people, all these people are people put to death by the courts for a capital crime, and yet there are gradations in them. But then it says that afterwards, once they've decomposed, then they can be buried. So it seems like the whole halacha that you can't bury the evil near the righteous is a halacha that applies to the first stage of burial while waiting for decomposition. That's when they still, he doesn't get into this, but I guess he means that's when they were still count as evildoers. Their body is still in, so they're still that person, just a deceased person. But once it's just bones, then it's just bones, and that's why they can go back with their families. And at that point is when the whole issue of leaving space between them will come into play. So all of this is the Shagazai's way of saying that the issue of leaving spaces between burial places, between people who have passed away, is only a question in their final resting place. So therefore, here, if they're burying them with the Sephardi cemetery, lifi sha'ah, only for temporarily now, I have to say that I think that the case in Paris and the inability of the community to have found a new cemetery over the course of 5 years would suggest that we can't say that something is as temporary as we think it is, but whatever the definition of temporary is, like I was saying, if you only bury them temporarily in the cemetery of the Sephardim until they have a chance to buy new ground and to set up a new cemetery, so again, I would question how quickly that all will happen, especially given what we know about this pecuniary parapet. He doesn't raise that issue. So he says, I don't think I could say to you that you don't need to leave a kedek tfisa. You don't need to leave the six tfachim, the amma, between each one of them. And that's whether they're side to side or one on top of the other, because it's only temporary. And I have these proofs from the case of Elisha, and from when the Gemara talks about not bearing evildoers near the righteous, I have proof that when these are completely temporary burials, then we don't need those kinds of separation. He says he would possibly that way lahalacha, or lamais, I mean, he would put that into practice. He would say that you can act on that idea assuming you have a fixed court, a permanent court, a Beit Din Kavua, and Rashi Am HaMemunim Al HaTzibor, and leaders whose job it is to run the community. But in the city of Paris, there I think we have to be machmir. I don't think we're allowed to allow this, them not to have the separation just during this temporary time, whether it's on top of or next to each other, because they don't have a well-established community with well-established procedures, and therefore we have to worry, like I said before, so I was wrong when I said he didn't discuss it, he says right here, we have to worry that they will not, in fact. Meaning when he said you can do it in temporary graves and you can rely on the community that it'll only be temporary, that's only when you have well-established communal procedures, a well-functioning court and leadership system. Because then you can be sure that when they say it's only temporary, it's really only temporary. But in a city that doesn't have that, you have to worry that they will not, in fact, do what they're supposed to do. And then, when it comes to the old coffins, he said you can burn them, so the Shagazari says, I think you have to burn them, but then I also think you have to bury the ashes in the ground of the new cemetery, because you can put it in a separate cemetery, it's a separate place within the cemetery, but you need a place in the cemetery for burying those items that were once used for some good valuable purpose, then you have to bury them. You also used to do it with things that had held yayin nesach in them. You would burn them and then bury the ashes so that nobody would make use of the ashes at all. So he thinks you have to do that as well. So the first guy, Rabbi Yosef David Zinsheim, had said you can burn them, and Shagazari is adding that you have to bury the ashes as well. And then when it comes to buying the new cemetery, we said that Yosef David Zinsheim had respect for the custom and said, well, if it's a custom, there must be a good reason for it. The Shagazari is not as willing to grant them that respect. He says it's divrei hevel. There's no source for it. It's just silliness. It doesn't have any value. But what you should do is you buy karka, you buy the cemetery for a beit hakvarot, for a cemetery, and then before you finish the sale, you make a chevra shel kavranim. You make a group of people who are dedicated to the burial of people who need burial. Hanikra chevra kadisha. We're called a chevra kadisha, holy fraternity. And the people, the members of the chevra, have a fast day for themselves, either on a Monday or a Thursday, and they say slichos, and they ask for rachamim, for Hashem's mercy, and they ask for bilah mavis. And that's when we reach the time when death will be vanquished forever, and then they can finish buying the cemetery, and they've now developed the cemetery. So he says, also, and you shouldn't think of it as likud atzama, that you can just do whatever you want with the bones. They should each be in their own separate thing, their own separate sack, their own separate bag, whatever. And I'm not going to go on with this because it's all pashut like you wrote, and we can hope that death goes away forever. So, fundamentally, that's where the Shagos Aryeh comes out. He agrees with the student about these issues of moving bodies, moving graves, how much space you have to have. And these are the issues we've seen. And I'm going to stop early today. I could have found another shiva to put in, but I'm going to stop early today because I feel like I've gone over time. Other times I went over 5 minutes over maybe yesterday. So now you can have your time back. Have a great day. This is a shiva day, a responsible day for the 26th of Shvat. Have a great day.